3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh yeah.
Alternative news, analysis and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, listeners. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here with a full house. Me, Hannah, Rob, and Edmi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are we?
Pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, good. My mic's not on.
What? Oh, you're two.
There
Sorry.
We go. Sorry. Good morning.
Sorry, Rob.
We're still waking up, but we have a lot of energy.
Yeah, we do have a lot of energy.
How is everyone feeling?
Good. I woke up at 3:45 this morning to watch the eclipse.
And you got back from Cairns yesterday.
And I'm back from Cairns.
Yeah. It was, what was it, a blood moon, lunar eclipse.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Was it?
It was really cool. It was really beautiful. It was red.
Yeah.
Red moon.
I caught a glimpse of it this morning as I was leaving.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I was looking at it through my binoculars. And
no way.
I always try and take photos of stuff through my binoculars, but a photo of a moon through binoculars is quite ambitious.
It looks like a street light.
Yeah, it didn't really work. How are you guys?
Yeah, good. Good. Been busy the past week. Obviously, lots going on, especially in activist communities. Lots going on the front line, so to speak. Yesterday was a sovereign day out. Was it yesterday or the day
before? Saturday.
Saturday. Just good seeing community support come together for mob.
Yeah, totally.
And yeah, I suppose another week of Free Palestine rallies. Lots of action happening in England, I believe, as well, with terrorism charges being pressed against people for holding placards and, repping their support on any level, which is crazy times.
Totally. I'm mad
so bizarre.
I'm sad I missed out on the camp sovereignty. It looked so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next one, eh?
Yeah. How about you, Rob?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm alive.
Thriving.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I have nothing to report, really.
Yeah.
I was working in Clyde all week, so I've been...
Clyde.
It's like near Officer, like Pakenham Way.
Oh, yeah.
So, just a lot of driving.
Yeah, Clyde's a mission.
It's a way out, and it's just really windy. Every day I was out there, it was just really windy.
It's been so windy.
But we were working with traffic control because we were like on a median strip. But one of the traffic controllers was like a month off from retirement. So I thought that was really interesting. I was like, yeah, good for you.
Yeah, that's nice.
Anyway, I'm alive. I'm
Yay.
Good. I'm awake. Should we just talk about what we have coming up on the show?
Yeah, let's get into it.
So we're going to start off the show with a segment from the Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence show, which is it's part two of episode one in a multi-part series produced and presented by Amy Chiara as part of her fortnightly program. So the series is about a mine proposed on the heritage-listed Mitchell River on Gunai Kunai country that feeds into the Gippsland Lakes. So we'll be hearing a segment from that first up in the show just after our news headlines. And then at 7:30, I'll be speaking with Ace, who is from an organization called Justice Not Jails. And we'll be speaking about the Northern Territory's 12-month trial of allowing members of the public to both purchase and carry pepper spray under what the Finocario government is calling an attempt to improve community safety. So that's happening at 7:30. And then, do you want to tell us about a 8 o'clock thing, Edmi?
Yeah, sure. After that, we'll be joined live in the studio by Roscoe Lee Brown. Roscoe is a Jamaican-Australian journalist and activist who went undercover as a muso to document Kanaki protests in mid-2024. And he's also a founder of Residence and Radio Rada, which you may have heard of, a decolonial media and mutual aid network operating across the Pacific. But we're going to have a chat about Camp Sovereignty and an event that ran last Thursday, September 4th, called Talking Country, where they had a number of people and representatives from their own countries exercising their sovereignty speak on how they're doing that. And yeah, it'd be good to have Roscoe on the show.
Great, but first headlines.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty gritty now. One, two, nitty gritty now, yeah, boom. Nitty gritty, who?
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM, and these are the news headlines for Monday, the 8th of September, 2025. The following headline contains themes of deportation and may be distressing to some listeners. If you or someone you know is not okay, you can access free and confidential support services such as Lifeline on 13 11 14, or otherwise contact the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre at 9422 5650. The Albanese government has rushed through laws allowing for the mass deportation of migrants and refugees, effectively stripping away their fundamental legal rights and protection. A media release from the Human Rights Law Center from Thursday the 4th of September speaks to the $400 million deal signed by the Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke, leading to the Anti-Fairness Bill Home Affairs Legislation Amendment, entrenching the Albanese government's deportation powers. The Anti-Fairness Bill came into effect on August 26th and amends the Migration Act of 1958 to, quote, remove the government's duty to give a person notice and end opportunity to respond when deciding to deport them to a third country, effectively allowing the government to ignore health, safety, or family separation risks that someone might face if exiled permanently to a country that is not their home. Remove the government's duty to give a person notice when issuing them a direction to cooperate with their own deportation when the failure to comply results in jail time, and retrospectively patch up visa decisions that were made on the basis of wrong information and wrong or outdated law, rather than allowing these decisions to be reconsidered and made again, end quote. Further, the amendments will mean the Australian government can essentially pay off any country through third country deportation powers to accept people they want to deport. These paid agreements are known as third country reception agreements. The Albanese government will be deporting migrants and refugees to Nauru's detention facility located on Nauru in the Central Pacific Ocean in the Micronesia subregion of Oceania, east of Papua New Guinea. Those deported will face consequences such as persecution, separation from their families, or death due to a lack of proper medical care or other reasons. Once again, if you or someone you know is not okay, you can access free and confidential support services such as Lifeline on 13 11 14, or otherwise contact the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre at 9422 5650.
Also in news this week, the Australian government is being urged to triple its climate finance before the upcoming Pacific Islands Forum in Honiara. Humanitarian organisations like Oxfam Australia, Plan International and Action Aid say Australia must commit at least $11 billion between 2025 and 2030 to help Pacific nations respond to rising seas, stronger storms and growing climate impacts. Australia currently gives less than 1% of global finance, which is far below the emissions, which are nearly at 5%. Environmental and humanitarian groups are also calling for $14 billion annually by 2035, funding by ending fossil fuel subsidies and introducing a pollution levy on coal, oil and gas. Local communities say funding rarely reaches the communities who need it most. Clement Manuri from Plan International Solomon Islands said, quote, "Our communities tell us they see little climate support. We need money that supports Pacific girls and their communities," end quote. Michelle Hayekjalin of Action Aid said, quote, "Women across the Pacific are living the impacts of a crisis that they didn't cause. It's only fair that countries like Australia pay their fair share," end quote. The organisations want climate finance to be grant-based, additional to the aid budget, and focused on those most affected. They're calling for $300 million for loss and damage, new support for gender-responsive programs, and more funding for community-led solutions. Dr. Krisanta Muli said, quote, "This isn't about charity, it's about justice," end quote. "Pacific communities need real support, not just words. And Australia must step up if it wants to be seen as a true partner to the Pacific," end quote.
Also in the news this week, a pamphlet distributed at the Australian Mayor's Summit Against Anti-Semitism has falsely linked the watermelon with the symbol of the watermelon with anti-Semitism. Independent news outlet Deep Cut News has reported. The pamphlet also claimed keffiyehs, the traditional Levantine Arab garment, as well as referring to Israel as a settler colonial state, labeling Gaza as an open-air prison, and other phrases such as intifada, resistance is justified, and free Palestine were all dubbed anti-Semitic in this pamphlet. It was given to officials representing over 80 local councils during the three-day summit in the Gold Coast. Nessa Mashni, host of the Palestine Remembered show at 3CR Community Radio, as well as the president of the Australian Palestinian Advocacy Network, told Deep Cut News that the pamphlet was evidence that this summit's attendees were, quote, "being spoon-fed white supremacist and racist disinformation to carry back into their communities," end quote. Among the many attendees were the City of Melbourne's Deputy Mayor Roisin Campbell, the Australian Human Rights Commissioner Lorraine Finlay, the Special Envoy to Combat Anti-Semitism Gillian Segal, and former Labor Senator Nova Perez. These have been the news headlines for Monday, the 8th of September. You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings. Cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources. And we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our land.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
Kufiyas are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kufiya to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kufiyas.org.au. That's kufiyas.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. Next up, we'll be playing part 2 of episode 1 in a multi-part series produced and presented by Amy Chiara as part of her fortnightly program Kill Your Lawn, Kick Your Fence. The series is about a mine proposed on the heritage listed Mitchell River on Gunakurnakai country that feeds into the Gippsland Lakes and the various complexities and issues associated with the project. The segment originally aired on September 5th, iteration of kick your lawn, kick your fence, kill your lawn. Have a listen.
We now hear from Robin, one of the lead organisers in the crew.
So along here on the right is where they're going to put the processing plant.
Yeah.
So any contamination will actually go into the Perry River system.
Okay, yeah.
That goes down to a very important vegetation or reserve area.
Yep.
And that's called Providence Ponds, and then it goes onto the lakes.
Right.
So once again, if you've got this problem of contamination of river systems, and with the stuff that they use in the processing, it's going to be an absolute disaster if anything happens.
Mm.
And just to add insult to injury, they're planning on locating the processing plant and the permanent contamination from that on somebody else's land. They're not even going to put it on their own land.
Mm.
So some other poor bugger gets to live with the issue for the generations to come.
There's been a lot of work done by the catchment management authorities around here,
yeah.
Replanting and fencing off,
yeah.
And so forth, and also fish release,
yeah.
Into the rivers,
yeah.
And that'll all be wasted if this mine goes ahead.
Absolutely.
Talking about rainfall,
yeah.
We had 3 inches or 75 mil in 10 minutes,
yeah.
One time. And there was no oxygen in the air.
Yep.
You couldn't see any grass. It was just water everywhere.
Yep.
And if that something like that strikes this mine site,
yep.
It'll just be absolutely disastrous.
Yep.
It's very exciting. But there was one thing about it. There was no oxygen in the air. The rain was just so heavy.
Oh, wow.
You couldn't breathe.
That's insane.
Yeah.
One time when we came down here on a tour, managed to see a azure kingfisher on the other bank.
Oh, amazing.
We've got platypus in the river.
Yep, well, that's another species that people are very worried about.
So the seam of gravel you can see there,
yeah.
That's where the groundwater systems interact.
Right,
so at
yep.
the moment, the river level's right up,
yep.
So it'll be feeding water back into the groundwater systems there in that
yep.
gravel seam.
Yeah.
When the river level drops, the water feeds back out and keeps
yeah.
the water supply flowing in the river.
Yeah.
John, what's the difference in water flow during a drought between here and wood and hillside?
So we're only using figures here, but say there's 20 megalitres passing by the Glen Allendale Bridge,
yep.
20 megs flow in the Mitchell here,
yeah.
And it can get up to 26, 28 megs at Kalulu,
yeah.
Which the river gains water.
Yeah.
From Glen Allendale to hillside.
Yeah.
So it gains that water through these gravel seams
yep.
that's coming out of the hills where
yep.
they plan to put the mine.
Yeah.
And that worries us. Now, 8 megalitres or so in the summer
yeah.
is very important to the whether it be the flow of the river or the horticulture industry.
Right, yeah, I see.
I'm very certain that it will contaminate the river, whether it be tailings or just simply rare earths entering the river.
Yeah.
All that.
And potentially radiation.
Radioactive. Yeah. It's in there. Yeah. We know all the issues with the depth of that.
And project. So megaliter, how much is that again? There'll be a lot of people who aren't farmers here.
megaliter is 10,000 litres.
10,000 litres.
A megaliter is 1,000,000 litres.
Right.
So a milk tanker.
Yeah.
You're familiar with the nice big milk tankers?
Yeah.
They're 25,000 litres.
Right, yeah.
So we're talking 4,000 tankers.
Okay. That's a lot of Olympic-sized swimming pools, as they might say. So that is a huge amount of water coming through the river that could get contaminated and move on to not only food production, but people's lives, ecosystems. Yeah.
I mean, you've got multiple impacts.
Yeah.
The obvious first one is the fact that they're going to draw 3,000 million litres out of the river.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of, as you say, Olympic-sized swimming pools.
Yeah.
And I can't even think in my head how many milk tankers that is.
Yeah.
A thumping lot,
yeah,
as my dad would say. So just that sheer drawdown is huge.
Yeah.
Then you've got the impact of them intersecting the groundwater system.
Yeah.
So they'll cut off those flows that keep the river flowing during the dry seasons.
Yeah.
And as John said, in the dry seasons, when nothing else is supplying the river, these groundwater systems are what keep it running. That's what keeps the fish breeding.
Yeah.
That's what keeps the bird life and the wildlife alive.
Yeah.
So if we cut off those groundwater systems, we're cutting off the dry season supply for the rivers.
Yeah.
And then you've also got the contamination issue.
Mm.
There's yet another issue as well, which is how does the proponent stop dirty water from the mine running down into the river? Mm. Even if it's only dirty from topsoil, it's still sediment. It's still going to choke out the wildlife in the river, the platypus, the fish, the microbiology.
Mm.
If you get too much turbidity, too much sediment in the water, all of that gets choked. You lose oxygen, you lose light, it chokes up gills.
Yep.
There's a whole raft of effects.
Yep.
So once you start scraping the dirt, you get one of these East Coast lows and 100 mil of rain, that dirty water has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
How do you stop that dirty water getting into the river?
Yeah.
So the only way to do that is to build dams.
Mm.
But we've got dispersive soils, and the Independent Assessment Committee said there is a high probability of catastrophic failure of dams.
Oh.
So you build a dam, fill it with dirty water,
mm.
but it's got a high probability of catastrophic failure.
Mm.
If it's across that gully there, John might end up to his knees in his house with muddy, contaminated water.
Yeah, I see, yeah.
And once that contaminated water's on the flats, you can't clean it up.
No.
We've asked the question, where is the water coming from? Whether it be 3, 4, 5 gigalitres of water to do this project, we've asked many times.
Yeah.
The Mitchell River is at full tilt. It is fully allocated.
Yeah.
There is no more water to be withdrawn from the Mitchell River. The underground system, we're looking at about the only one that's available would be the Latrobe Aquifer, which is, it's fully allocated too. If anyone in this area wanted to get withdrawal water from there's no more licenses available.
Mm.
It has been shut off for around 15 years.
Mm.
So how the hell, where is the 4, 5, 6 gigs coming from?
Mm.
It's, they can't answer. They're going to start drilling, research drilling as we speak.
Yeah.
But there's nothing there. We can't have any more withdrawing.
Yet another complication is that locally we showed you that where the water storage is, which is just above, diagonally above John's place.
Yeah.
One of the things that East Gippsland Water does to try and ensure water supply for the towns is it draws water from the river during winter fill, like now.
Mm.
And it pumps it down into the Latrobe Aquifer for storage.
Yeah.
And pumping water down into an aquifer it's not a bad way of storing water. You've already sort of got a mechanism there.
Yeah.
And then in the dry seasons, they pump it back out.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how they would feel about pumping water down into the Latrobe Aquifer to have their neighbours start sucking it out and using it for a mine that then contaminates their own water.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
One thing they wanted to do too was put in a big dam, or use one of the mining dams, as a drought-proof mechanism for the vegetable farmers in the Lindenau Flats.
Yeah.
And, you know, for 20,000 acres, you're going to need a very big dam, and also it could be contaminated water if it's coming off the mine site.
And dams are a bit controversial with in terms of protecting the environment as well, in terms of what impacts they potentially can have. Yeah.
This was an issue that was explored with the first mine proposal, and it was absolutely knocked on the head by the water authority, Southern Rural Water, because the dam would be on private property, so any change of ownership, you have to renegotiate all your access rights. And then how do you get water from, say, that gully 5 kilometres down the flats? Because the water coming out of the bottom of the dam is cold and doesn't have any oxygen in it, so you can't just release it into the river because you'll kill everything in the river.
Yeah.
So you can't use the river as your conduit, so how are you going to then get the water down there?
Yeah.
It's just a fantasy. It's there's no, it's all fluff. There's no substance to it.
Yeah.
What about you know, you look at the any contamination of these products into the river, whether it be flocculant, processing material, whatever.
Yeah.
Like we got the fish breeding ground down the mouth of the Mitchell here.
Yeah.
Very important. All the platypuses, all the other things that live in the river, they're very sensitive. Frogs and that sensitive to any contamination. Or we all know those sort of animals, I suppose, are very sensitive. And they could be knocked down in a flash.
Yeah.
We worry about the whole package of stuff. It's not just my farm here on the edge of the river.
Yeah.
It's the big picture. And the people, the residents that live near it, I fear for them.
Yeah, yeah, and you've expressed to me so many times, all of you today, just how much you just love being here, how much you love the place. Yeah.
Yeah, like dust coming off the hill. Like a few years back, the gum trees were flowering, and they do it every now and then. They flower every so many years. And the flowers from those gum trees off the plateau up here, the river was white with flower.
Yeah.
Even windy days, it all come and swirled down and landed on the river.
That would have been magical.
It was just, it was a sight I'd only seen about 3 years in 40 years.
Yeah.
And the river was white with this, the flowers of the gum trees. So you can imagine dust coming off that mine site.
Yeah.
Where's it going to end up? It's going to swirl down, drop in the river, and thanks very much.
Yeah.
And you've got to remember too that all this water goes out through the Gippsland Lakes.
Yeah.
So that is a huge tourist destination. Yeah. And they have in the past told people they can't swim, like at Meetung, that was from...
Oh, there were elder blooms?
Yeah.
Yeah, elder, yeah.
So, you know, tourists were coming and weren't allowed to put their foot in the water.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to happen if this mine goes ahead. The same problems are going to occur and they won't be able to be fixed.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. If you're just tuning in, that was part two of episode one in a multi-part series produced and presented by Amy Chiara as part of her fortnightly program, Kill Your Lawn, Kick Your Fence. To listen to the first part of this series in full, head to 3cr.org.au/killyourlawn, and you can find some more information at mindfreeglenaladale.org.au. Hear more from Amy on Kick Your Lawn, Kick Your Fence, Kill Your Lawn show every second Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. or go to 3cr.org.au/killyourlawn.
If you're experiencing family violence, free legal support is available. You may need support with obtaining protection, setting up safe parenting arrangements, organising a new visa, getting into safe housing, or making sure bills and bank accounts are split fairly. Community legal centres have expertise in helping people who experience family violence and can provide confidential advice to help you understand your rights and legal options. Reach out today for guidance and support. Visit www.fclc.org.au and click Get Help to find a community legal centre near you. you don't have to face family violence alone. If you're currently in crisis, please contact Safe Steps on 1800 015 188. Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Hi, I'm Cam Smith from Yanar Pasaran.
I'm Andy Fleming.
Andy, quick question. The commercial media, that provides a voice to marginalised communities, doesn't it? And as governments around the world take a turn to the far right, it provides a critical anti-fascist analysis?
Cam, how many times do I have to tell you this? No, that's not the case.
Oh, that's not good. So who is doing all that?
Cam, community media, including 3CR, Melbourne's community radio.
And how can we support 3CR in doing that?
We can subscribe, Cam, at any time.
By visiting 3cr.org.au or calling the station on 9419 8377. Subscribe to 3CR.
And stay anti-fascist.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That song was Gut Health by Inner Norm. The other way around, sorry. It was Inner Norm by Gut Health. My apologies. Last week, the Northern Territory's 12-month trial of allowing members of the public to purchase and carry pepper spray began under what the Finocchiario government calls an attempt to improve community safety. In response, 21 community organisations have signed an open letter declaring the NT government's policies are, quote, doing more harm than good, end quote. One signatory of the letter is Justice Not Jails, a grassroots community group working to oppose the racist CRP government on unceded Larrakia country, taking action against tough-on-crime agendas that are targeting First Nations communities. The Monday Breakfast Show is now joined by Ace, who's a member of Justice Not Jails. Good morning, Ace.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. Ace, maybe you want to start off by telling us what has led to this trial and what else it entails.
Yeah, so, we've got a little bit of a lag. I'll see how we can cope. The introduction of pepper spray into the community on Monday is part of a series of tough-on-crime measures that the Leah Finocchiari the LP government has introduced. They've just come up to 1 year in government here up in the Northern Territory. The CLP, for those who don't know, is the Country Liberal Party. Imagine if the Coalition, the Liberal Party and the National Party got together and formed a party. And they had earlier in the year said that they wanted to trial pepper spray into the community. And this goes against all advice that essentially introducing more weapons into the community. And I think everyone can agree that community safety is everyone's concern, but these kind of responses goes against the evidence around community safety and also maybe defies all logic. So Just As Much Ales is, we got together with a range of other concerned organisations. We've had Danila Dilba, which is an Aboriginal health organisation up here in the top end, the Justice Reform Initiative, the Australian Education Union, a broad range of organisations have signed onto this letter to say that this approach won't produce community safety. Since launching the letter on the 28th of August, we've actually had almost 20 other organisations from across the territory join onto that letter. So we'll be sort of launching that in the coming days.
Wow, that's amazing that so many other organisations have jumped on to sign.
Yeah, well, I think that shows that the community appetite to forgive me, that there is a huge concern for this approach by the government. So, some of the work of Justice for Jails is making sure that the tough on the crime agenda that the government has can't dominate the discussion.
Mm. So I guess the big question is, do you think that allowing certain members of the public, and I do say general public, because of course the trial does have restrictions on who is eligible, do you think that allowing them to purchase and carry pepper spray will address crime in the territory?
No, the short answer is no, and I feel confident when I say that alongside all the signatories of the letter. I think that, we really look, I've experienced pepper spray. I'm originally from Melbourne, so thanks Victoria Police for giving me pepper spray. We can understand it as a weapon, and we can really assert the logic that more weapons in the community doesn't produce community safety. The trial, there is some restrictions on who can purchase it. My understanding is that 8 people who are meant to be on the banned purchaser of pepper spray list have purchased pepper spray, and that now the police are chasing their tail trying to follow up these purchases. I'm not really personally interested in that. I just think it shows the ludicrous nature of the government trying to talk about community safety and then introducing more weapons to into the community.
You mentioned before that the Country Liberal Party has been in government for over a year now. I'm curious to know what else the Vinokario government has introduced to sort of, quote-unquote, improve community safety.
Yes, it's a sad day to mark 1 year of the Leah Vinokiari government. And the introduction of pepper spray is just one of a series of attacks on Aboriginal lives, if I'm honest. If I read you through the list, we can see who's going to be most impacted by this. There's also around the same time as the pepper spray, the CLP, and they just put some legislation through last week to put sort of PSO-like security personnel to install them with guns, both in public housing and on the public bus network. So they're working to put guns in these places. They've also made some major changes to the Youth Justice Act. These are really concerning because it removes a lot of accountability and accountability measures for use of force in our youth prison system, definitely doesn't make our prison system safer for young people, and And then they've also obviously in the first couple of weeks they lowered the age of criminal responsibility back down to 10 years of age. It had been only recently raised to the age of 12, but that went down pretty quickly. And then, of course, they reintroduced spit hoods back into the prison system, which is once again against the... there was the Royal Commission into the Youth Justice System here in the Northern Territory that came out in 2017, and the removing spit hoods as a youth in prison was a major recommendation from that, which has not been listened to. And then also we now have some of the toughest bail laws in the country.
And I think the Victorian government is, you know, also pretty keen to, has been toughening bail laws for most of this year I don't know, maybe there's a link between the toughening of bail laws in the Northern Territory and the toughening of bail laws here in Victoria. Maybe you would like to talk about, for some time been curious, because of the mainstream media has obviously had quite an eye on crime across the Northern Territory over the past year since the CRP was elected. What effect do you think that has had on policies of the government there?
I'll get to that question. Maybe jumping back to that, like the commonality between like Victoria and tougher bail conditions. I think a lot of these issues we can look at on a national level. Like, I really am not into this idea of Northern Territory exceptionalism. You know, things like banning spit hoods, that's something the government could make national, raising the age of criminal responsibility. There's some things that we could sort of have across this continent because we know that these are attacks on families across the country. So I really always try and think about this stuff as like sort of federal demands we could make in terms of strategy. And we know, maybe just to say that. And then around the media attention to the Northern Territory, I think that also comes down to the exception, some idea of exceptionalism in the Northern Territory and the media's fascination in this stuff. When the media, runs these... how do I want to pose this? When the media allows right-wing politicians such as Damien Ryan and Matt Patterson, the mayors of Alice Springs, who really have courted the attention of Sky News and corporate media to bring attention to, elements of community crisis, they're looking for attention and political careerism rather than looking to support people to make better choices and to support families. If politicians really wanted to do something about crime, I always say, like, double the dole, which they did do during COVID, if you want to, the best place. Yeah, we need to, provide families the support to help, come to crisis or when someone is choosing, making some choices that involve some criminal element.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem you mentioned before, it just seemed like a very illogical decision. You know, they want to improve community safety, so they introduce more weapons into the community. especially with, what I guess the mainstream media are calling, like a crime crisis or whatever. So maybe you'd like to pivot to talk more about the work that Justice Not Jails is doing, to oppose the sort of really harsh policies of the government there.
I guess one of the aims of Justice Not Jails is to provide an alternative voice around this tough on crime political agenda that so many politicians seem to have. It goes against the evidence that if we want long-term community safety and and help for our communities. Tough on crime doesn't work, and all the evidence suggests that wrapping around families, addressing poverty, working on housing, etc., like the evidence is there. It's just that we have, that the tough on crime narrative is really dominant. So one of our strategies is to really uplift the voices of alternative voices and insert ourselves into the media landscape, whether it's 3CR or more less community-driven forms of media. And so we meet regularly and are an open coalition of people that want to work in this space. We don't just do stuff around media engagement. We are really, we just had a protest on Tuesday to mark or to mourn 1 year of the CLP government and to listen to a range of community voices that were concerned about the government's policies. We do some mutual aid work, such as lift to the Holt prison facility, which is the new youth prison facility. And we really see ourselves as a site for community in connection and engagement. We go to market. I mean, I don't know if people have been to Darwin, but the markets are a bit of a cultural phenomenon up here, and so we've done community engagement and talking to people about it. Because the thing that we all have in common is, like, concerns for community safety, but it's the logic that we draw, like, the actions and demands we have out of that can be co-opted into tough on crime violence and more violence in our community, or we can talk about, like, what it would take to actually, live and prosper.
Yeah, and I do think, I know you said that media engagement is not all that does, but community engagement, especially in this area where, you know, as you said, like, politicians are willing to, you know, speak with conservative or right-wing media to, you know, bolster their own career, potentially. It's very important to get your voice out there, you know, to make a statement on the contrary, you know?
Yeah, and I guess, like, maybe the thing I haven't mentioned is just, like, maybe, like, the overt racism embedded in all that, who is going to be the most, experience the most violence out of all these attacks. But also we really want to work with families that are directly impacted by this, and that's many. But, for example, Ned Hargraves just came up this week to speak at the protest, and, we could chant "Stand Down Stephen Hague," who is the copper who, I'll insert the word, allegedly killed Ned's grandson in Coles just the other month, Kumanjai White. And so really, there are communities whose voices are being listened to, whose voices are in the media, does matter. And how do we get these demands, really reasonable demands, not just Stand Down Hague, but talking about that idea of federal demands, that police are still investigating police, and that's happening in the Kumanjai White case. And this is something that we could be thinking on a federal level, an independent body to investigate when police kill community members.
Rally.
I'm Cam Smith from Yanar Pesaran.
Oh, I'm Andy Flynn.
Apologies. apologies for that, Ace. I'm curious to know. The rally on Tuesday, what was the sort of, and I guess the rallies in this cause in general over the past year, what has been sort of the police response to this kind of thing?
Many things. I mean, even the police union is concerned about the safety inside the prisons. They're not really a huge fan of locking more people out because they know that actually that doesn't even make their workers safer. That wasn't a major theme of our rally. We really wanted to mourn that 1 year of the CLP is 1 year too many, and that this is a range, and to really highlight the range of changes and attacks that the CLP government have done to the community. I guess we wanted to mourn or mark 1 year. We're also building to another bigger protest on the 14th of October. That's when Parliament, NT Parliament, will be sitting again. And then that next protest that we're building towards is bringing a range of Aboriginal communities from across the Northern Territory to Parliament to speak up and out against what the government is doing. We've been focusing in this discussion a lot about the injustice system up here, but it's Gadrian Hoosen from Borroloola, who's been a climate activist and environmental activist and speaking up against the McCarthy River mine up there that they have on their country, had this really great saying that, you know, the CLP government says that they're trying to keep us safe, but they're actually killing us, you know, and that's through attacks on the environment too. I think if we want to talk about what's going on in the Northern Territory government, we also, the Leah Fanocchiari government, introduced this thing called the Territory Coordinator, which is someone who's able to greenlight development, mostly mining projects, without the normal checks and balances. It can not consider a range of legislation, including the Environmental Protection Act. The Northern Territory already has some of the worst environmental protection laws in this continent, but they've sort of got this new role that can green light and push things through for development even quicker. So we're building to get even more voices and speaking up and against this, what's going on in the Northern Territory.
Yeah, well, good luck with the campaign and you know, the wider push against these really like horrific policies. We just have a few moments left of the interview, Ace. Is there anything else you wanted to add? Maybe where people can find Justice Not Jails?
We're big on social media, Rob. There's no two ways to go. I produce a lot of content from Instagram. We're getting a bit better at Facebook, so please follow us there. There's a lot of different voices and videos from and statements that the community within Justice Not Jails have made. And then I guess the other bit I'd say is, like, where are the pressure points on a national level or wherever your listeners are to sort of tap into this, because this is stuff that's not just going on in the Northern Territory. This is just, I just know the local examples, but like you said, Victoria's tougher bail laws are also being pushed through. So we have to push back against the tough on crime makes us safer across the continent.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for your insight and for joining us, Ace.
No worries. I love 3CR. Love community radio.
Thank you so much. That's so nice to hear. Have a good morning.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
And that was Ace from Justice Not Jails over on unceded Larrakia country. We were speaking about the Northern Territory's 12-month trial of allowing members of the public to purchase and carry pepper spray, which began last week, as well as the open letter 21 community organizations have signed against that policy and others from the Northern Territory government. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 855 AM. Stay tuned.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. Next up, we're joined live in the studio by Roscoe Lee Brown. Roscoe is a Jamaican-Australian journalist and activist who went undercover as a musician to document Kanaki protests in mid-2024. He's also founder of Resi Dance and Radio Rada, a decolonial media and mutual aid network operating across the Pacific. Good morning, Roscoe.
Ah, good morning. Good morning, 3CR listeners. Roscoe Lee Brown here, Radio Rada. Lovely to be here. I've survived the morning traffic. Don't know how.
Good job.
Who did that? Do we know? Can we get the number of the person who designed the way you come in from, like, out west in the morning? Like, can we?
Well, they're changing it all at the moment.
Oh, are they? Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, that might be nice.
Yeah, chuck another grid in there.
Yeah. Yeah. With lock. That grid lock.
Yeah, grid lock.
Yeah, yeah. I'll like, think of it. Particularly that right-hand turn at the Queen Victoria Markets. I love it. It's fantastic.
The Royal Gridlock.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for coming in. It's nice to have your energy in the studio, not going to lie.
Not a problem. That's what Radio Rada's designed to do, bring the energy, bring the vibe, spread the word. For those who don't know, for those dear listeners out there who don't know, Rada is a Anuan word for smoke. And so I'm trying to be like smoke. You know, a little bit difficult to figure out where I'm coming from, but I stick to you. You know, like you go home and you take your jacket off and you put it up on the hook, and then next winter when you pull it on, it's like, what's that? Oh, I remember that. Yeah, so I'm trying to be a little bit like that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you stuck to me. I was at Camp Sov in, I think, April when you did a talk on Kanaki liberation solidarity stuff.
Yeah, yeah. May time that would have been. May the 13th, earlier this year, we had a commemoration at Camp Sovereignty. For 12 months since the French failed coup, a coup that's since succeeded, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But yeah, May 13 last year, 2024, young Kanaki people took to the streets in order to defend their communities against French invasion. The French had been trying to add 45,000 people to the New Caledonia electoral roll because the Kanak had gained control of the Congress or the Parliament mm-hmm. for the first time. For those people who don't know, Kanaki, New Caledonia, 2 hours across the Tropic of Capricorn off the coast of Australia. Kanaki people think they live in Gondwana. They think they're Aboriginal people. They recognise the giant continent that lies under the ocean between New Zealand, Kanaki and Australia, or so-called Australia. And they recognise that they are part of that that idea. And so since, interestingly, October the 7th, 2023, funny old date, when the Macron government instituted what they're calling the MARTY project, M-A-R-T-Y, it was I'm calling it an administrative coup, an attempt to add 45,000 French citizens to the New Caledonia electoral roll. It is a move that was rejected by the then Kanak-controlled Congress at about 2 o'clock on May the 13th, 2024. By 5 o'clock that evening, about 8 Kanak young people were dead. Now, the French call that an uprising. In fact, Macron attacked across three fronts. One in a place called Saint-Louis, a tribal area that is in fact still under lockdown today, nearly 18 months later, or nearly 2 years later, in fact. Saint-Louis in a place called Tibon, which is, what would you call it, a favela, a ghetto, a bunch of tower blocks, a bit like the ones they're trying to knock over in Melbourne here, a bunch of tower blocks in a valley ringed by settler, you know, million-dollar houses. Those settlers, armed and trained and equipped by the police, attacked their neighbours that day. And in the third place, a place called Concepcion, a cartel. So peace militants in New Caledonia describe their suburbs as cartels, or call their suburbs cartels. Most of these cartels are inside some other kind of settler suburb. And so at a place called Concepcion, where the then president, a fellow called Ruk Wamitan, which is his chiefdom, they attack there. And so, as I say, the piece of legislation failed to go through the parliament at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. By dark, about 8 Kanaka dead. By the morning, 8,000 businesses have been burned, some numbers of trillions of francs worth. And what the Kanak say is, yes, we did burn buildings. Yes, we burnt the Mercedes dealership. We burnt McDonald's. We burnt Aldi. But we did not burn the furniture factory because that's where we work. We did not burn the Coca-Cola factory because that's where we work. And so since then, the apartheid that was underway in New Caledonia has kind of ramped up. Medical services are pretty much non-existent for Kanak. Mm-hmm. Most municipal services, buses, housing assistance, little things like scholarships. You know, so there are, for example, on the outer islands. So New Caledonia is a main island with a bunch of outer islands. All of those outer islands do not have secondary education. People have to come into New Caledonia on a scholarship system. So, for example, this time last year when everyone came to do the day where you go to sign up, none of the scholarship money was available. Like, and no warning. So people had moved, set up in, you know, and they've been doing this, you know, for generations. Families have, you know, other parts of their family on the mainland while they live on the islands, and they send their children into the mainland to be educated. Well, that thing happened, you know, boatloads of people, and all of a sudden the scholarship system that pays for all of that was down.
Where did it go?
Where did it go? Exactly right. And it's taken a year and it's still not back.
Yeah.
So little, you know, it's those little, you know, what look like little microaggressions all joined together turn into a very real apartheid.
A big fish.
Yeah. And again, dear listener, Radio Rada here, Roscoe Lee Brown. New Caledonia is a strategic point in the supposed bulwark or the opposition to China. It's part of the Pacific, you know, archipelago of islands and countries that form a kind of physical barrier between the NATO-aligned countries against China. And New Caledonia or Kanaki is one of those important places. The French have had and will continue to have a nuclear submarine base on New Caledonia that nobody knows about. That's not included in the words of AUKUS, but is in fact pretty much the principal function of that AUKUS pact, is for those submarines to be maintained as they always have been in New Caledonia. So little things like that. Well, that's a big thing, but things like that that are secret and hidden.
In the terms and conditions.
Yeah, the terms and conditions. So Australia, so-called Australia, is engaging with the rest of the Western world, with the NATO powers, in a little game of annexation. And unfortunately, Kanak, which is 2 hours off the coast of Australia, is one of those places that's kind of in the grip of a recolonisation based on nickel and its strategic place in the Pacific.
Yeah, I heard Robbie say at yesterday's Free Palestine rally that we never consented to this colonial occupation. And it's the same story with the Kanak people, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, Kanak people, very proud, very, you know, they're Aboriginal people, as I say. You go to New Caledonia, and if you know any Aboriginal people, you walk down the street and you see a person walking toward you and you go, oh, yeah! And then you realise, oh, hang on, I'm in Noumea. That can't be Robbie Thorpe, you know, or whoever it is you think it is. But they look exactly the same, like stupidly exactly the same. Mm. Those people are trapped in a colonial vortex. 1854 was when the French got there. September the 24th is their invasion day. So coming up is the anniversary, the yearly anniversary, but it's also the anniversary of a declaration of independence by the Grand Chiefs. So there's a thing called the Inaj Ni Kanaki, which is an organisation of all of the 62 chiefs. So there's 62 chiefdoms in the Kanaki system, and those chiefs in September last year came together in a place called Maray, the Isle of Maray, Larouche, under the kind of guidance of the King of Gerasheba, a fellow called Sinawame, who is the president of this thing called the Inaj Nikanaki, or is the president of the 62 chiefs. He was part of a thing called the Customary Senate, so the New Caledonia political system, French territory, with a Congress with 56 seats and a customary Senate. In the lead up to this coup that we were talking about on May the 13th, the customary Senate withdrew because they could not see the point. They had no money. They could not institute any of the programs that they had designed for young people in New Caledonia. So Sinawame, the current king of Gerasheba, the king of Kanaki, led a withdrawal as part of the protests against this Marty project. So on the one side, you have the customary leaders. On the other side, you have unionized political leaders. And so one of the things that happened during this kind of coup was that 2,600 peace militants were arrested, Kanaki peace militants were arrested. Most of them were part of a thing called the CCAT, the Field Action Coordination Team, a mobilization unit set up by a fellow called Christian Tien, who was arrested and deported to France. He's still in France. He's out of prison, but he's still in France today. And so Sinawame and Christian Tien are trying to rekindle an association from back in the day. So again, dear listener, Roscoe Lee Brown here from Radio Rada. Just to bring you up to kind of speed and up to date on what's happening in Kanaki, between 1974 and 1984, there was a civil war. And in this civil war, the customary and the political leaders at that time tried to come together, but they were both assassinated and could not. And so Sinawame and Christian Tien are trying to rekindle that association because there's a schism in the Kanaki community or in the Kanaki independence movement. You have what they say is that the church radicalized the chiefs, so the Catholic Church, you know, evangelizing in the kind of out in the countryside, they radicalized the chiefs, and the union movement radicalized the population. So think about it, you know, these families often have 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 children. The oldest male becomes the king. So all his brothers and his cousins, they're never going to be the king. So they all went and lived, you know, they all took off and went to the city. And when they went to the city, they got work. Most of the work was in kind of labouring style jobs, unionised labouring style jobs. So most of those people end up in the union movement, and through that association end up in the parliament. So in fact, the people leading and running Kanaki are not their leaders. They are the second, third and fourth sons and uncles and cousins. The king is still at home. And currently has no power. So the kind of upshot of all of this disruption has been a renegotiation of the funding arrangements between France and New Caledonia. The French are offering a voice-style referendum to the Kanak people. Do you want to be a Caledonian? Of course, the answer to that by any independentist Kanak is no, in the same way that here... when asked a similar question, do you want to be part of the constitution, a certain kind of blackfella here went, no, I do not. I'm not Australian. I've never been Australian. I do not want to be Australian. Similarly in Kanaki, there's a certain kind of peace militant who says, no, I do not want to be a Caledonian. That's what this is about. You know, I've never wanted to be a Caledonian. I don't think I'm a Caledonian. I don't even know where Caledonia is.
Sounds like the resistance is strong.
Yes, very, very. As I say, these are, and remembering, dear listener, these are you. Mm-hmm. On May 13, people like the young people I'm sitting here in the room with and many others left their jobs.
True.
And took up their place on the front line and were killed. There's officially 13 deaths, but there's 500 people missing. UN, there's been now 3 UN reports by the... human rights rapporteurs, and all of them have condemned the French for what they're calling administrative disappearances.
Yeah.
So there are 500 people who are unaccounted for. Now, that's kind of the principal reason I end up in Kanaki. So Uncle Coco, Wayne Wharton, a traditional owner man from the Brisbane Blacks, a Cooma man from out west of Brisbane, was walking past a Harvey Norman on May the 13th and saw, as you do in the window, a silent television. And he saw smoke and blackfellas, in his own words. And so he, you know, in his usual way, went and tried to find out what the hell was going on. And what he discovered was this thing was happening in a place called Kanaki. And when he, you know, did his ringing around, he stumbled upon made contact with a thing called the World Women's March. And those guys, a feminist socialist organization, organized for an interpreter from Kanaki Free Nam here in Melbourne, and a photographer went to see what was going on. And they came back and he gave me a call and said, go to Kanaki and tell the story, because that's what the Kanaki people are asking us to do. So that's what I did. And I went as a person who was taking testimony from the mothers of people who'd been disappeared or murdered. And while I was there, there was a double murder in Saint Louis. The French killed two young boys, said that they had fired on the French and were killed in response. One was found naked, raped in a dry riverbed with a big hole in his chest, and the other one died on the way to the hospital. And so it turned into a live news project. And so there, you know, thus Radio Rada is born. I, you know, was struggling to figure out what to call it. And so I just, you know, kind of spontaneously on that first kind of report said, Roscoe Lee Brown for Radio Rada. And so that's kind of stuck since. And that's been the work, you know, the Kanaki work since, trying to amplify the situation in New Caledonia in order that the Kanak can have a voice, because there are no there is no reporting going on from that place that's not French kind of based or French paid or from the French perspective. It was interesting being there and being that person, you know, like I have a journalistic background, of course, you know, I've read lots of things from war zones and all sorts of conflict areas, but it was interesting to be the person that was there and be the only one that was actually trying to tell the story from the perspective of the people that were being attacked.
Well, to all the listeners out there, you're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. Currently chatting with Roscoe Lee Brown from Radio Rada, who's been in Kanaki. But a question that I have, and a statement as well, is that every listener listening or tuning in this morning has come from a mother. But to interview the mothers of people that have disappeared in Kanaki, what did their voice say?
Oh, well, you know, it's all pain and anguish. But it's interesting, of course, the language in New Caledonia or in Kanaki is French. I'm not a French speaker. And so very often in these testimonies, because you need interpretation, it gets a bit clunky. And so the first couple of days were kind of weird, to be absolutely frank, for both parties. Because initially you had this interpretation where I would speak, the interpreter would speak to the person, then the person would speak, and then the interpreter would speak to me. So all of that can take a long time. And I'd be sitting there and I'd say, what time did your son disappear? You know, so a short question like that. And then the interpreter would speak for like 5 minutes. And I'd be going, what are they saying? Like, what could they possibly be saying? And so there was, you know, those initial few days were really clunky and not very satisfying for anybody. After a couple of days, a different interpreter came. And what they did was they just sat behind me and they just spoke into my ear when the other person spoke at the same time. And then when I spoke, they just kind of stuck their head out from behind my head and spoke in French as I spoke. And that after that, I felt like I was having conversations, and you could just see from the people I was talking to the relief on their faces. Initially, they looked really troubled, and initially I thought, that's because of the subject matter. But as I discovered, it was more about the way we were doing it. And the fact that those initial couple of they were like interviews, they're a little bit like this. And so people were intimidated. I look like a policeman.
Yeah.
You know, who am I? They don't know who I am. I'm this person with a microphone trying to shove it in their face. And so after that kind of first couple of days, I put all my equipment away. And I just sat and sat with people and ate, you know, and spent time. So they got comfortable with the fact that I was there. And then I would kind of pull out my recording, you know, equipment and put it on the table. And we'd, you know, people keep talking. And then after a while, I would kind of gesture toward it, you know, and people would kind of nod or shake me off, you know. And then I, you know, so we proceeded that way. And and then again, with this different kind of translation, more in real time, things kind of calmed down and smoothed out, and it became a kind of conversation. And in the end, I wasn't there. You know, like I would just turn up and put the recording thing down, and I'd had the conversation with the interpreter before I got there about what we were doing. And after a couple of days, they figured out what we were doing. And so, in fact, I didn't do anything really.
Like smoke.
Yes, exactly right. I was in the room, but they were talking among themselves, you know, which made it much more interesting than me sticking a microphone in their face, kind of, you know, looking and sounding like a policeman. And the other thing too, aside from the mothers, the room is filled with the young people.
Mm.
And so for the listener who doesn't know, I'm a 60-year-old man, you know, like most of the people, and I will say this about the work over the last year, and for the listener who doesn't know, I'm sitting in a room with people I'm presuming are under probably 30 years old.
Yeah.
So most of the people I encounter are young people. So I have to do something, you know, I have to be something that doesn't feel threatening. And so anyone who's seen the show or been around can see that I use music as a way to kind of break down that barrier and to bring us together. So that we can have a proper conversation. Otherwise, I just look like a policeman or a school principal or your father, you know. And so I get that response, you know. And it's just like, as I say, people don't know who I am. I'm just going to turn up with this. And they don't know who I am and I don't speak French. You know, so like, who is this? Like, who are? So, you know, and again, for the dear listener, you know, one of the things about Kanaki is that ganja is a huge thing in Kanaki. It's a it's a very central part of socialization. And so, again, you know, I would turn up and I would get high with people because that's what they were doing.
Mm.
Now, of course, the first few times I did this, my hosts were horrified. And at one point, the kind of main person pulled me aside one day and said, like, what the fuck are you doing? We brought you here and all you're doing is getting high. I said, if you've noticed that things have shifted over the last couple of days, for the first couple of days, I didn't get high with people, you know, because I was trying to honor the people that brought me there.
Yeah.
But I could see that this was a huge barrier because it wasn't just the young people, everybody was, except for the people who were my handlers.
True.
They were kind of anti-
Yeah.
Ganja, but everybody else,
yeah.
You know, didn't matter how old they were, didn't matter mother, you know, sister, brother, didn't everybody. And so in order to, you know, to be a part of that,
yeah.
you kind of got to get, you know, I'm not doing anything that I don't want to do,
yeah.
You know, but it became a kind of very important part of the work because it put people at ease. It made them feel like I was one of them, and it made me disappear. It yeah. made me fade out of the picture and allowed them to just do their thing. And so I think, you know, in that way, it helped, you know, that was a really important thing. But it was a funny old kind of thing the first couple of days. We got rumbled at a checkpoint.
Mm. What happened?
We go up bush, had this great couple of days, and the last place we stop, and the curfew starts at 6 p.m., and so we're leaving to go home. At like it's already 6:30, and we're 40 k's out of town, and so we're going to have to go through some kind of checkpoint to get back into town. And of course, the last people we go to see give me this big, sticky, smelly purple bud, you know. And it's like it's as big as my hand, and I'm standing there, and I know I should. I'm like I've got it, and I'm thinking I shouldn't carry this. I've got to get rid of it. But it's so big and beautiful that I go, no, all right, I'll stick it in my pocket. And of course, it's in the car, and all the way back, all you can smell is this bud, like the whole car. We got the windows down. We're going, you know. And it's and we're getting closer and closer to the checkpoint, and the driver's now freaking out, like he's now actually freaking out. Chuck it out the window, chuck it out the window. And of course we get there, and I think, oh no, I'll just put it in my pocket, and you know, we'll see what happens. And of course we get there, the first thing that happens is the little beagle just loses its brain, just goes completely nutso. And of course I have to immediately go to the policeman. Oh, look here, man. And I just hand him this bud. And they fine me 4,000 French francs, which is about $40. And then the dude rolls it up and smokes it in front of me. And laughs. And laughs. And my two companions, my two Kanak companions are now off to the other side, and they're doing the good cop, bad cop thing, you know, kind of rumbling them as if they're going to take them away to jail. And they're losing their minds. They think they're going to jail. And, you know, it all kind of turns out okay in the end. But that's the kind of things that kind of go on. Yeah. The next week, the next kind of translator they give me, his job is to go around to all the cartels and give them the weed.
Mm.
So we got pulled over like 7 times in 8 days.
Yeah.
By the same coppers, and each time they pretended like they'd never met us.
Yeah.
So by the third and fourth time, it was like I don't know, it was like some kind of weird movie. You know, and they're saying the same things that they were saying before. And I'm going, haven't we been here before? Like by now I'm kind of emboldened. The first couple of times, like, of course, I'm petrified. I think, oh God, I'm going to end up in a Kanaki prison or something. You know, like I've heard horrible stories about, you know, the prison system. So luckily I didn't, thankfully. But that level of harassment, that level of just daily getting turned over, you know, just to disrupt your day, checkpoints everywhere. The militia, the settler militia were allowed to set up their own checkpoints. And so you're moving around the city and you can't get anywhere. You know, they keep turning you around. So you do these kind of, you end up having to park your car and walk 10Ks to where you're going because you can't get there because there's some kind of barrier in the way. So it's an interesting world.
We've got to move the barrier.
We've got to move. Well, and exactly. And that's where that, again, dear listener, Roscoe Lee Brown here for Radio Rada. If you've ever come along to any of the shows, you'll have heard the barrier song, You've Got to Move the Barrier, which is an old ska tune from Jamaica that a bunch of young boys in a place called Bays. When I get there and to meet them and talk to them, they're a band. It turns out I've come to meet a band, so I spend 3 days with these fellas playing music. And they had a bunch of ska tunes from home, from my home. So that was fantastic. And we put together, or we, you know, added some verses to an old Gaylords tune called Move the Barrier. Got to move the barrier because we don't want to be no warrior. Yeah, got to move the barrier one and all, some way, somehow. This is an old spiritual, the kind of Jamaican, you know, freedom spiritual that the young people of Kanak have picked up and have added to. So anybody that's come along and got to sing that, you're singing a true liberation tune.
Sick. If you send it through, we can chuck it on the show next week. And then put in the show notes. And
well, I don't have a recording, and it's an old tune. There's a YouTube chip. There's a YouTube clip of the original somewhere. I'll track it down and I'll send it to you. And again, you know, Roscoe Lee Brown is smoke. So, you know, I don't record the tunes. Other people record things that we do. But I don't record the tunes. People say, oh, you got a recording of this? No, I don't have a recording of the tunes. Because it's different every time, too. That's the other thing. You know, again, if you've ever been to more than one of these shows, you'll realize that the music, it's spontaneous. It's, you know, it's different every time.
Roscoe, we've got time for one last question. Yep. Just to reflect back what you just spoke to as well, I think there's something to be said around breaking down that barrier between and letting go of the professional identities that we hold on to and cling to because they're not who we really are. So sometimes you got to smoke weed. But not to
tragedy. It's a tragedy. Yes, dear listener out there, those young people listening, of course, drug use is terrible. It's tragic and it's horrible and it affects people's lives.
My last question, we've only got about 2 or 3 minutes. But on Thursday, there was the Talking Country event was held in Brunswick. Mm. And I believe the Canuck Great Chief Sinawami was there and spoke.
He didn't in the end, unfortunately. There's a death. There's a death in the community. And so we didn't get him on the line, unfortunately.
Prayers up.
Yeah. One of the difficulties with this work at the moment is the language barrier, flat out. Every time we've tried to dial people in, when we've done the shows and we dial people in from outside, you need interpretation, and it's clunky. It just is. Mm. And so we've never done it that and afterwards I've been happy. Mm-hmm. It's important to do. Mm. Even as a gesture, I think, it's an important to attempt to do. But yeah, I've got to figure a way to do it well. Dear listener, Roscoe and Radio Rada need a budget. Mm-hmm. That's what's needed in these things. That's absolutely true. We're doing this stuff off the smell of an oily rag and, on the good grace of our hosts, various. I know if we had a budget, we could do it like a proper talk show, mm-hmm. And it'd look like and sound like and feel like a proper talk show, but we don't have any budget, so it's kind of a bit freewheeling and rambly.
Not yet.
Not yet, exactly.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. I've been joined in the studio. I'm here with Hannah and Rob. I've been joined by Roscoe Lee Brown from Radio Rata, who is requesting funds, donations. So after the show, we'll put a link in the show notes where listeners can donate. Highly recommend you do.
Well, if we've got 1 minute left, what I would say is you can buy coffee to fund the frontline. We have a thing called Resistance Coffee. You can buy subscription coffee from Resistance that will fund the frontline. All the beans come from wild-grown, shade-grown liberation farmers in Kanaki, West Papua, and Jamaica. And the funds that are raised that are not for the front line. So just quickly, the wholesale price is where the farmers get their money. So the funds that come out of that go back to farmers. The difference between the wholesale and the retail price is then used for purpose. Mm-hmm. And the purpose in this case is for an instant coffee product. So all across the autochthon world, all across the ocean kingdoms, First Nations people are spending most of their money on necessities. A key necessity in these cases is Nestle instant coffee, which is on every table. And so the idea is to produce a product that liberation independence can sell amongst themselves and replace Nestle.
So buy the coffee and tip the coffee. Tip the people that make the coffee.
Yeah. So there's detail here, dear listener, to know where to find these things. 3CR will have that information. You can contribute to the frontline.
Thank you very much, Roscoe.
You've been listening to the Monday Breakfast Show. That brings us to the end of the show that we were just speaking to Roscoe Lee Brown live in the studio. And before that, we were speaking with Ace from Justice Not Jails about the tough on crime policy in the Northern Territory affecting First Nations communities. Thanks for listening. You're on 3CR 855 AM. I'll see you next week.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall, Carlton. Keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.